Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
And so, I'm sorry, Sergeant Buchanan. When you come into the hospital room where Mr. O'Keefe's body was, there's clothing items that are on the floor, is that correct?
That's correct.
And do you recall how those clothing items were in relation to each other in relation to the floor?
They were positioned on the floor in a pile stacked on top of each other, and they were in a condition of being soaking wet.
And with respect to those clothing items, do you recall what those clothing items were, individually?
Yes, sir.
And what were they?
They were a plaid pair of boxer underwear. It was a orange-colored design print T-shirt. It was a blue pair of Lucky Brand jeans, a belt, two-tone gray light, thin, hooded sweatshirt, and a right sneaker, black in color with white design and a Nike brand.
And how many sneakers were there contained within that property?
One right sneaker.
And what, if any, observations did you make of the condition beyond them being soaking wet?
I also recognized, due to the aroma and visual observations, traces of vomit on the clothing.
And with regard to those items that you observed on the floor, what, if anything, did you and or Trooper Proctor do with reference to those clothing items?
Objection.
I'll allow that.
Once we went through the clothing, we collected each item and put it into a large evidence bag. We double bagged it due to the wetness of the clothing, so it would not seep through. We also identified the fact that there was only one sneaker. So I requested that Trooper Proctor contact the paramedics that transported Mr. O'Keefe from 34 Fairview to the hospital and have them once again check their ambulance to see if there was another sneaker inadvertently left behind in the ambulance vehicle.
Now, prior to sort of physically touching this or any other piece of evidence, what, if any, other sort of precautions do you take prior to handling, tactile handling, any piece of evidence?
Anytime we handle evidence, which obviously we take great caution not to destroy, alter, or discard any evidence, we also put on gloves in order to help preserve that item.
And in reference to these items or items of anything of evidentiary value that you seize as evidence, once you take it and secure it into an evidence bag, what happens to it from there?
Once it's secured in the evidence bag, it is sealed and logged into our evidence storage facility at the office. And then as necessary, it is signed out, shipped off to for processing, review, or court proceedings.
And as far as that sealing is concerned, how are bags or boxes of items of evidentiary value, how are they sealed?
Once the bag is...
I'll allow it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Once the bag is sealed, we utilize tape, typically red or yellow tape. Once it's secured, we initial and date the tape on the edge. That procedure helps identify the time and date it was sealed and by who with the initials.
And then once that bag or box is sealed, if that bag or box is subsequently opened at a later time, what if any notation or what if any recordation of that is made?
Anytime a piece of evidence is signed out for review, it's logged in the tracking system. In addition, anytime a piece of evidence is open, with a container being a bag or a box is open and the tape is cut, it is then resealed, reinitialed, and dated by the trooper or an individual who's signing that evidence out and then returning it.
As far as the evidence bag or box is concerned, when it's been opened, is that something that is noticeable based on the sealing and resealing of that particular receptacle?
Yes, sir. It is definitely noticeable, and it's noted in the systems.
Now, with regard to, you mentioned or made some mention earlier in the testimony in regard to evidence storage facilities at your office.
Yes.
Can you describe what those are and who, if anyone, has access to those evidence storage areas?
Within our office, we have two troopers that are designated as evidence officers. Those individuals have access to the secure rooms designated strictly for evidence storage. Those rooms are inventoried and kept under not just lock and key, but also digital access control and alarm systems. They are the only ones that have access to those facilities, in addition to our unit commander. But I'll tell you that our unit commander does not access that room without the evidence officers. I myself, even as a supervisor, do not have access to that room.
You don't have access to that evidence room, is that correct?
That's correct.
Is Trooper Proctor, is he one of those evidence officers? Did he have access to that room?
He does not.
As far as at the time in January of 2022, who were the troopers within your office who did have access to that room?
In January 2022, that would be Trooper Jeff Kakowski and Trooper David DeChico.
And that would be in addition to Lieutenant Tully, is that correct?
Detective Lieutenant Tully, I believe, has access to it, but I cannot speak to that. I just believe that he does, as a unit commander, to facilitate any next assignment.
Now, with reference to any items that you were physically present for that were taken into custody or taken into evidence, including that clothing from the hospital on January 29th and any other items throughout the course of this investigation, when they were taped and sealed, what happened with each of those items once they were taken back to your office?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
Each item that was sealed, it was processed in, it was logged in, and then it was stored after processing, it was stored in the evidence room.
Now, returning back to the Good Samaritan Hospital, within that hospital room, you made mention that you secured items and that you made observations of Mr. O'Keefe, is that correct?
That's correct.
And can you describe for the jury, as far as Mr. O'Keefe's body, what were those observations that you made?
Mr. O'Keefe's body was laying on his back. The observations I made were of bruising to the eyelids of his face. Based on my experience and having cases with head trauma, I can tell you that during subdural hematoma,
I'll sustain the objection. You can build a foundation if you can, Mr. Lally.
Over the course of your work with this unit, in particular, if you know about how many homicide let me step into it this way. As far as your work within this unit, as far as it's concerned, what, if any, jurisdiction does the State Police Detective Unit of the District Attorney's Office have with reference to not only homicide, but death investigations within Norfolk County?
By statute, Chapter 38, Section 4, each county, the District Attorney's Office is provided jurisdiction over all death investigations. As a result, the law enforcement entities that are assigned to that Norfolk or that district attorney perform the investigations. In Norfolk County, those individuals are members of the Massachusetts State Police assigned to the State Police Detective Unit within our office.
And so as far as death investigations, what exactly or what type of investigations would that encompass?
Death investigations that we have jurisdiction over are all unattended deaths. Unattended death means that a physician, a doctor, is not overseeing the individual that passes. Those deaths would be suicides, homicides, overdose-type deaths, natural deaths, accidental deaths, and so forth. Any type of death that is not overseen by a doctor at a medical facility or in a hospice-type situation.
So as a result of your assignment to this unit and that sort of exclusivity of jurisdiction over unattended deaths within Norfolk County, if you know approximately how many death investigations have you been a part of over the course of your work with the State Police Detective Unit?
Over the last 9 years, I would venture to say it's over 500 death investigations that I was a part of.
And Sergeant, over the course of your involvement within those investigations, if you know, how many of those investigations involved some indication or some type of head trauma?
Scores of investigations that involved some sort of head trauma.
And through the course of your investigations, in those cases that have involved scores of head trauma, have you been privy to information as far as medical findings, autopsy reports, things of that nature in relation to those prior investigations?
Yes, sir, I have been.
Now, with regard to your observations of Mr. O'Keefe, with regard to his eyelids, what if any observations did you make, and what if any, well, let me start just with physical observations. What if any physical observations did you make of Mr. O'Keefe's face and body in general?
His face, I observed the swelling and the discoloration being produced through the blood pooling in the eyelids.
Yep, so just your observation, so the swelling and discoloration.
Move to strike.
I'll strike the remainder of what you've said.
I also observed a cut to his nostril and an eyelid, which was very small in size, which would have been produced by a...
Objection.
Yeah, so we'll leave it at that. Next question, Mr. Lally.
Based on your training experience, what, if any, conclusions or what, if any, opinions did you have in regard to the swelling around the eyes?
Objection.
Yeah, I'll see you at sidebar here.
Did.
Yes.
So, Sergeant Mechanic, with reference to your prior death investigations, have you had occasion to make observations of bodies that there was a later determination of some sort of subdural hemorrhage?
Yes.
I'll allow that. Have you made those observations? Have you been part of those investigations?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Yes.
And what you observed in regard to Mr. O'Keefe, was that consistent or inconsistent with what you had observed on those prior investigations?
Objection.
That I'll allow.
It was consistent.
Now, in addition to the injuries that you observed to Mr. O'Keefe's face, what, if any, injuries did you observe to his extremities?
His extremities produced abrasions to his upper forearm and lower bicep area on his right arm.
And just as you use that term, I'm not asking for any sort of medical definition, but as far as you use that term, abrasions, what do you understand that term to be?
I understand that term to be a injury sustained through blunt force trauma or friction to the epidermis of the skin, where a crushing of the vascular system occurs and produces that type of sign on the skin.
And from your observation of the injuries to Mr. O'Keefe's arm, which arm was this again?
It was his right arm.
And as far as your observation of those injuries to his right arm, what, if any, as far as the consistency of those injuries, what, if anything, did you note or observe in reference to those?
Objection.
Consistency with what? With the...
Let me rephrase this.
Yeah.
How were the abrasions that you're describing positioned in relation to each other?
Each abrasion appeared to me to be linear and concentrated in a specific location on the arm. It didn't go any further north of a point and did not go any further south of a point. So it was concentrated in the elbow, a few inches below the elbow, a few inches above the elbow, on the right arm.
Now, while you were at the Good Samaritan Hospital, did you endeavor to speak with Ms. Reed?
We did attempt to, yes.
And was she present at the hospital at that time?
No, she was not.
And at some point subsequent to that, did you receive, or what, if any, information did you receive as to her whereabouts?
We were made aware that she was located at 345 Country Hill Drive in Dighton at her parents' home.
And where did you go from the Good Samaritan Hospital once you left from there?
We proceeded to that location.
Now, sir, with reference to the items of clothing that you recovered from the Good Samaritan of Mr. O'Keefe's, do you have those items of clothing with you here today in court?
Yes, I do.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, I would ask that the witness be allowed to retrieve those items and display those items.
Okay, are they in the courtroom?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, yes.
May I approach?
Yes.
Thank you.
many items are we talking about?
Four, Your Honor.
Okay. Jurors, if we go a little past one, my intention would be to still just take a half-hour lunch today and come back, so I'd rather just go through this if we could.
Sergeant?
Yes. Presenting you with this item, do you recognize that?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
The sweatshirt from the hospital room where Mr. O'Keefe was located.
And, Your Honor, the Commonwealth is seeking to introduce and admit that as the next exhibit.
Okay, any objection, Mr. Jackson?
Sort of need to see what's in the bag before I can object, but I'm so
up. Okay. All right, so you've received photos of all of this, right?
I assume what's in the bag is what's been photographed, but until I see it, I won't know.
All right, so let's go ahead and open it.
With the court's permission?
Yes.
Thank you.
Objection.
Mr. Lally, why don't you come take the bag? Yes.
Put it back in the bag.
It's in evidence, and we'll put that back in the bag. Okay.
Approach, Your Honor.
Yes.
I need you another item, sir. Do you recognize that item?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
Says it's a one orange T-shirt.
And Your Honor, with the court's permission, if the witness could remove that item and display for the jury as well.
Yes.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Another item, sir, you recognize that?
Yes, it's the right sneaker recovered from the hospital room.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, if the witness could remove that item from
yes.
the bag.
Yes. Okay. Continue, Sergeant.
You are unmuted.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lally.
Yes, thank you, sir. If you could return that to the back, please. I'll introduce him as an expert.
Yes, I'm going to.
No objection.
Thank you.
May I approach one last time? My apologies.
Your Honor, I guess I should have said no objection with what we discussed.
I understand.
Thank you.
Your Honor, may I approach the witness again?
Yes.
Do you recognize that?
Yes, it's a bag containing a blue jeans, black belt, and plaid boxer shorts.
And, Your Honor, with the court's permission, may the witness remove just the jeans and the belt from the bag?
Yes.
You can return that to the back, sir. Your Honor, the Commonwealth will seek to introduce and admit as the next exhibit.
Okay.
No objection, Your Honor.
Thank you. So are you not displaying the third item, but it's going into evidence? Or is it just the jeans and the belt going into evidence?
The jeans and the belt into evidence, Your Honor, with the court's permission.
So we can mark the bag and we'll remove the third item during a break.
Thank you. Is it at 440, Your Honor?
Thank you. All right, so Sergeant, you'll be with us this afternoon. Why don't we take our lunch and recess? It's only going to be about a half an hour.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, so folks, we'll see you back here, let's say no later than 1:40, okay?
Court, all rise for jury.
You are muted.
Thank you. Maybe see the quarterback in session.
All right, Mr. Lally.
May we approach this briefly?
Okay. You can go ahead, Mr. Lally.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Sergeant Buchanan, Those items, as far as the clothing items that you displayed for the jury just prior to the recess, those were the same clothing items that you recovered from the hospital room of the Good Samaritan on January 29th, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, you had mentioned earlier in your testimony that those items had been placed into one bag initially. What, if anything, happened with those items as far as their keeping or their bagging once you got back to the office or to your where the evidence room is?
Due to the condition of those items after they arrived at the office, the items were laid out on butcher's paper that we utilize for evidence viewing and allowed to dry naturally because they were soaking wet.
And as far as when they were done with that sort of drying process, how were they packaged from there?
They were packaged in the bags, sealed up, and stored for transport and processing.
And so those would be bags individual for each clothing item, is that correct?
Each item, that the way that it was packaged, the pants with the belt and the boxers, and then so on and so forth with the sweatshirt and the sneakers.
And get to this a little bit more in a moment, but at some point there were pieces of plastic, red and clear plastic, that were recovered by you and other troopers from Fairview Road, is that correct?
That's correct.
At any point in time, were pieces of clear and red plastic that were recovered from 34 Fairview Road ever placed inside the same evidence bag as any piece of clothing that you recovered?
No, absolutely not.
Now, with reference to the Hospital of Good Samaritan, in addition to yourself and Trooper Proctor, were there other members of the state police or other units of the state police that arrived at the hospital at some point?
Yes, sir. Lieutenant Mello came to the hospital to document the victim and the clothing, and he's assigned to the State Police Crime Scene Services Section.
Now, as far as the Crime Scene Services Section, or CSSS, what, if any, role do they have with relation to your investigation in this case, or your investigations in general as far as documentation is concerned?
Crime Scene Services Section assists us in documenting scenes through video and photographs. They also assist in collecting latent prints, fingerprints. They assist in collecting impressions, like foot impressions in mud or soil, and those types of missions.
Now, there are a number of different troopers that are assigned to that particular unit, is that correct?
That's correct.
And as far as over the course of this investigation, how many occasions approximately were there that a member of the Crime Scene Services Section responded to memorialize or photograph different scenes or different areas throughout the course of your investigation in this case?
Just off the top of my head, there would be 4, 5, maybe 6 instances where a trooper or sergeant from Crime Scene Services responded to the scene to assist us in this investigation.
Now, at any point in the time over the course of the investigation when Crime Scene Services troopers responded to document anything, was it ever the same trooper more than once?
No, it was not.
And so with regard to January 29th back at the Good Samaritan Hospital, there were Sergeant Mello arrived to document or photograph Mr. O'Keefe, correct?
That's correct.
And Your Honor, may I approach the witness?
Yes. Mr. Lally, do you want me to give my instruction now or in a few minutes?
Just about 30 seconds.
Okay.
And so, Sergeant Mechanic just placed 3 photographs before you. Do you recognize what's depicted in those 3 photographs?
I do.
And what do you recognize those to be?
That is Mr. John O'Keefe.
And what's contained within those photographs is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you saw of Mr. O'Keefe's body at the Good Samaritan Hospital on January 29th?
Yes, it is.
Your Honor, may I approach again?
Yes.
Your Honor, the Commonwealth seeks to introduce an admit.
All right, so there's no objection, right? All right, so folks, the Commonwealth is introducing into evidence through this witness certain photographs that are not pleasant and may be considered graphic photos. Sometimes evidence is presented that creates an emotional reaction in jurors. For example, it's natural and understandable to feel sympathy and empathy when you hear about a person who was injured in some serious way or suffered in some way or who has passed away. But as jurors, you've taken an oath to follow the law, and I instruct you that you must separate any emotional reaction on your part from the informational value and weight of the evidence. You must not be influenced in any way by the nature of some of the testimony, and you must find the facts in this case based only on the evidence. You can't find facts or base your decision on sympathy, anger, passion, or prejudice, or pity for or against either side in this case. Rather, your verdict must be based solely on the evidence and my instructions on the law. All right, with that, Mr. Lally, those photos will be in evidence.
Thank you. Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish just briefly each of the three respective photographs?
Yes.
It's 441.
Thank you.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2866. And Sergeant, direct your attention to the screen. Is that what's displayed on there now has been marked as Exhibit 441. Do you recognize that?
Yes, I do.
And using the laser pointer on the desk before you, if you could, draw the jury's attention to what, if anything, of significance you observe in this particular photograph of Mr. O'Keefe.
I observed the swelling of the eyelids, slight laceration of the nostril and the eyelid, the blood pooling on the bed, and that depiction of Mr. O'Keefe.
Ms. Gilman, can I photograph 2857? And again, Sergeant, do you recognize what's up on the screen and is now marked as Exhibit 442?
I do.
And similar to the prior exhibit, if you could, using the laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to what, if anything, is significant to observe in this photo.
I observed the lateral. Abrasions and markings on the skin of Mr. O'Keefe, limited between that point there and that point there, as I described earlier in my testimony.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have 2859. And again, Sergeant, do you recognize what's up on the screen and has now been marked as Exhibit 443?
I do.
And this is, what do you see in this photograph?
It's the same abrasions to Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, just further up on the bicep, tricep, shoulder area.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Gilman, you can take that. Now, Sergeant, taking you back to January 29th, 2022, after you left the Good Samaritan Hospital, where is it that you went?
We went to 345 Country Hill Drive in Dighton.
And that was the residence of Ms. Reed's parents, is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, on your way from the Good Samaritan in Brockton to the residence in Dighton, what, if any, communication did either you or Trooper Proctor have with regard to the Dighton police?
I advised Trooper Proctor to contact Dighton Police Dispatch and advised them that we would be responding to the location, 345 Country Hill Drive, and seizing a vehicle. And we were requesting uniformed patrols to assist us in that mission.
And why was that request made of the local PD?
We were going into their jurisdiction. There was a blizzard going on. We were considerate of the circumstance and wanting to be courteous to the Reed residents and not just show up without any uniform presence. We have never met the Reed family. They have never met us. And with the clothing that we were wearing, it would be difficult for them to see that we were law enforcement.
And so as you arrive in that area of the residence in Dighton, where did you position yourselves and when did you arrive in relation to the MARC unit from Dighton?
We called them while we were still on the highway and gave them an approximate time of arrival. GPS was not accurate due to the conditions at the time on the roadways. Once we arrived to Dighton, I positioned my vehicle at the top of Country Hill Drive, awaiting a marked uniformed officer from Dighton to meet us there.
And if you know, about how long approximately did it take you to get from Brockton to Dighton on that particular day?
From Brockton to Dighton, it took us about 45 minutes to an hour to travel that distance.
And if you know, about what time was it that you arrived at the residence in Dighton?
We arrived approximately on the street at 2:30 or so in the afternoon, and we waited for a significant amount of time for the uniform patrol to arrive.
And when the uniform patrol arrived, at some point did you learn the name of at least one of those officers that arrived at the residence with you?
At the time I did, yes.
And was that an Officer Barrows?
Yes, it was.
And so when Officer Barrows arrived, where did you then proceed with Officer Barrows upon his arrival?
Well, the road was only plowed the width of one vehicle, so even though he and his partner were in a F-150 or 250 marked police cruiser, we could only travel in single line. We traveled up to the cul-de-sac, turned around and positioned our vehicles facing back out to the way that we entered the roadway, or that street. We parked on the roadway since the driveway was not plowed, and we walked, waded through the snow to the front door of the residence.
When you say the driveway was not plowed or you waded through the snow, can you describe to the jury sort of the condition of the driveway as you made your way from the street to the house?
With the blowing winds and the drifting snow, there were locations along our walk to the property with snow varying from knee-high to up to my waist. For reference, I'm 6'1", so it was quite deep in some locations.
And as you made your way to the home, what, if anything, did you observe in the driveway?
As we walked up to the driveway in front of the garage, we observed a large Lexus black and color SUV bearing Massachusetts registration 3GC684.
And subsequently, did you come to find out whose vehicle that was?
Yes, once we queried the plate, we learned that the vehicle was registered to the defendant.
And as you're going by this vehicle, what, if any, observations did you make of the vehicle as you were walking past it toward the home?
I observed a damaged rear right taillight fixture on the vehicle from my vantage point. I also told Trooper Proctor to approach the vehicle closer and confirm what I was seeing, which he did.
And as far as that damage to the right passenger taillight area, can you describe sort of what it was that you saw during that initial phase?
Absolutely. During the initial phase, I observed snow compacted and caked onto portions of the taillight casing. There were pieces missing, and I knew that because the left side taillight was intact.
And as you made your way past the vehicle to the home, at some point are you greeted or do you meet someone in the area of the home?
Yes, once we walked up to the front door, I rang the doorbell and Mr. Reed opened the front door with the glass storm door, unable to open due to the level of snow on the ground and on the front steps.
And so where were you directed to enter the home from?
Mr. Reed directed us to the garage door, at which point it opened up and Trooper Proctor and I entered the garage. We were once again greeted by Mr. Reed and invited into the home.
And Officer Barrows, where did he remain when you and Trooper Proctor went in the home?
He remained outside with the vehicle. During our time in the home, Officer Barrows came in and asked if what the plan was and offered to have DPW plow out the driveway because the tow truck was not able to maneuver into the driveway in order to retrieve that vehicle.
Now, as far as during any time that you were on scene or at this residence in Dighton, did you yourself or did you observe Trooper Proctor touch that vehicle at any point in any way while you were there?
No.
And did you observe Officer Barrows or any other personnel beyond the tow truck driver touch the vehicle in any way?
No.
And as far as the tow truck driver was concerned, did you observe that individual touch anywhere in the rear passenger side area of that vehicle at any time that you were there?
No.
So then you proceed inside the home, and when you get inside the home, where did you go, and who, if anyone, did you speak?
We were directed by Mr. Reed to the living room where the defendant was seated on the couch. She had her laptop on her lap and her phone resting on the right armrest of the couch.
Now, in addition to the defendant and her father, who, if anyone else, was present when you talked to Ms. Reed?
The defendant's mother. Mrs. Reed was also present in the home.
And the defendant's mother and the defendant's father, were they present throughout the course of your interview or your discussion with Ms. Reed?
Yes, they were.
And at any point in time, did you ask them to leave or anything like that?
I did not, no.
Now, with respect to, can you describe sort of the demeanor or the tone of the conversation that you had with Ms. Reed that afternoon?
It was polite, courteous. She had just went through a traumatic event, so we were considerate of her losing her boyfriend. And we had a normal tone conversation. We were in the information gathering, fact-finding portion of the investigation. We simply wanted to collect her recollection of events that she remembered.
And so throughout the course of this interview, how are you, are you standing, are you seated, or how are you positioned in relation to Ms. Reed, and how is she positioned in relation to you?
She was sitting on the couch. We were standing across the room. I don't recall if there was a coffee table, but if there was a coffee table, we would be standing on the opposite side of that coffee table if there was one present. I do not remember if there was one present. But that's the distance, approximately from me to the defense table.
And if you could describe to the jury sort of how did that interview or how did that conversation begin? What was said?
First things first, we introduce ourselves, advise the individual we're speaking with, who we are, where we work, and what we're looking to find out. The defendant was advised that we're looking to get a recollection of the events, what happened, what she observed, what she remembers from the night before, and to walk us through the last 24 hours or so of activity.
And prior
to... Do I need to give an instruction, Mr. Lally? I'm not sure exactly. Why don't I see counsel at sidebar for a minute?
You did.
All right, so I interrupted you, Sergeant, and I'm going to instruct you jurors, okay? We're about to hear testimony about statements allegedly made by the defendant, Karen Reed, allegedly concerning the crimes that are charged in this case. Before you may even consider any such statement as evidence, the Commonwealth must prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant made the statement that she's alleged to have made, and that she made it voluntarily, freely, and rationally. In determining whether any statement made by the defendant was voluntary or not, you may consider all the surrounding circumstances. These include when and where the statement was made, the nature of any conversations with the police or questioning by the police, and the defendant's physical and mental condition, including her intelligence, age, education, experience, and personality. Your decision does not turn upon any one factor. You must consider the totality of the surrounding circumstances. I'll instruct you about this again at the end of the case, but for purposes of as you hear the testimony, that's the lens that you have to sort of hear it through. All right, with that, Mr. Lally.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, Sergeant Mechanic, when you began to speak to the defendant, prior to any sort of substantive conversation, what, if any, conversation did you have with her about the conversation you were going to have?
I just asked her to recount any events and the history between the actions that were taking place.
And how did she initially respond to that?
She stated that she's willing to answer our questions. She just doesn't want to go into too much detail about what transpired. And given the circumstances that she had just lived through, I understood and gave her that courtesy.
And as far as that interview or that conversation went, can you describe that conversation or the contents of that conversation to the jury?
Absolutely. The conversation was normal tone of voice, like I am speaking to you right now. Ms. Reed responded in the same tone of voice, answered questions. The content of the conversation began with her saying that, as I stated, she doesn't want to go into too much detail, but she was willing to answer our questions. We asked what she had for plans, what she had for as far as activity the night before, leading up to Mr. O'Keefe being discovered. She stated that she was in a relationship with Mr. O'Keefe that morning, meaning the 28th of January. She got into a fight with Mr. O'Keefe over what the niece and nephew were being fed for breakfast, or what they had for breakfast. She went on to say that she met Mr. O'Keefe at C.F. McCarthy's approximately 9 p.m. the night of the 28th of January, 2022. She stated that the gentlemen were drinking, consuming beers, Bud Lights, and she was drinking vodka soda. Prior to moving on to the bar at Waterfall, the defendant was asked where she parked her vehicle. She told me that she parked her vehicle on Washington Street across the street from C.F. McCarthy's, facing northbound. So the vehicle was on the side of Waterfall Bar and Grill. We went on through the conversation, the interview, to the Waterfall restaurant, at which point she was asked if she left C.F. McCarthy's with a beverage or a container from that establishment, to which point she stated that she did not. She also confirmed that Mr. O'Keefe did not have any injuries on him when she interacted with him at C.F. McCarthy's or the Waterfall. He did not get into any verbal or physical altercations with anyone to have sustained those injuries. She stated that once at the Waterfall, they stayed for approximately an hour, hanging out with acquaintances. And then they left the Waterfall. She drove them to, after they were invited to a residence, she drove them to a location in Canton where she dropped Mr. O'Keefe off. She was asked if she saw Mr. O'Keefe walk into the home at 34 Fairview, and she stated she did not. She stated that she made a three-point turn after dropping him off and left. She was asked whether or not Mr. O'Keefe, let me back up. She was asked if she knew, how she found out about the damage to her vehicle, to which she stated, quote, "I don't know, it happened last night," end quote.
Now, at some point earlier in the interview, what, if any, indication did she give as to who Mr. O'Keefe was with when she arrived at C.F. McCarthy's and sort of how long he had been with those respective people?
She indicated that Mr. O'Keefe was with Mr. Camerano, Kurt Roberts, at which point she was asked to provide contact information, meaning phone numbers for those individuals, at which time she picked up the phone on the right armrest of the couch, manipulated the device, entering a passcode, and provided that phone number to Trooper Proctor and I.
And at any point in time in the conversation or interview you had with her, what if anything did the defendant say in regard to why she had not gone into the residence at Fairview Road herself?
The defendant stated that she was having stomach issues and did not want to enter the residence.
Now, what, if anything, did she tell you about the later on that morning of the 29th?
She stated that when she woke up, she began looking for Mr. O'Keefe. And when she found him in the snow, she began CPR on Mr. O'Keefe.
And what, if anything, did she say to you about any observations she made of Mr. O'Keefe later on that morning as far as any injuries to Mr. O'Keefe?
The defendant stated that while she was performing CPR, Mr. O'Keefe had sustained injuries and was bleeding from the nose and the mouth.
And if you recall, what, if anything, did she say about Mr. O'Keefe's eyes at that time?
The defendant stated that Mr. O'Keefe's eyes were swollen.
Is that both eyes? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, as the interview progressed, at some point, did you ask questions seeking further details?
Yes, I did.
And details about what specifically were you asking?
Once we got to the point in time where the defendant told me she did a three-point turn, I asked her to walk through step by step of her operating the vehicle and exactly what she did. Prior to that, I asked her, she was asked to give a step-by-step recollection of how she, what she did in manipulating the vehicle and leaving the scene.
And at that point, was the interview terminated?
Yes, it was.
Now, once the interview concluded or was terminated, what, if anything, did you do with reference to Ms. Reed's phone and the defendant's vehicle?
Once the interview was terminated, I advised Ms. Reed that her phone was going to be seized as evidence and her vehicle was going to be seized as evidence as well.
And did you subsequently seize both of those items, sir?
Yes, we did.
And similar to the clothing of Mr. O'Keefe, as far as evidence was concerned, was that packaged and taped and transported back to the office in a similar fashion?
The device was, the vehicle was transported via tow truck that was dispatched by Dighton PD on our request.
And so when you get back outside of the residence after the conclusion of your interview with the defendant, what, if anything, did you observe going on with regard to the driveway and or any other vehicles that weren't there when you went into the house?
During our interview, I glanced out the window and I saw flashing amber lights and a tow truck plowing the driveway. So the driveway was plowed and the tow truck was, plow truck was plowing the driveway, not the tow truck. And the tow truck was loading the vehicle onto the flatbed.
And from at any point in time when you were outside of the residence, what, if any, observations did you make as far as cameras or anything like that on the exterior of the home?
I did not see cameras on the exterior of the home at that point in time.
Subsequent to that date, did you become aware that there were exterior cameras that record on the exterior of the home in Dighton?
Subsequently, yes. We learned that there was video recording of the residence and the driveway.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Uh,
Sir, I'm showing you a disc.
Do you recognize that, sir?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that to be?
I recognize it to be Dighton videos as it relates to the location where the interview and the vehicle was seized from.
And what's contained on that, as far as the video is concerned, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed as far as the defendant's vehicle being loaded onto a tow truck?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Can I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm up to seek to introduce the witness and execute it.
No objection.
And Your Honor, with the court's permission, if I could publish those two short clips for the jury?
Yes.
Just tell me if you could click on it and then pause when it begins. You could press the mic.
Delilah, you need to keep your voice up.
Yes. You want to pause right there, please. Now, the Sergeant Mechanic, from this particular point of the video, do you recognize the vehicle that has just pulled into the driveway?
Yes, I do.
Is that the same driveway that you had walked up from the street to the house in Dighton on that morning?
Yes, it is.
As far as the vehicle is concerned, what do you recognize that vehicle to be?
That would be the Lexus SUV owned by the defendant, Bear Massachusetts Registration 3GC684.
How many think I'd press play for next? This woman, if you could pause right now. Two individuals just exited that vehicle, is that correct, Sergeant?
That's correct.
Do you recognize who those individuals are as far as who they are and from what part of the vehicle they exited from?
Yes, the passenger side exit was the defendant, and then the driver's side vehicle was Mr. Reed.
That'd be the defendant's father, is that correct?
That's correct.
And this gentleman, if you could play this to the end. Now, Sergeant, towards the end of that video, did you observe the defendant and her father in any specific area in relation to that vehicle?
Yes, I observed the defendant and her father at the rear right taillight, gesturing or signaling towards the affected, damaged, and missing parts of the taillight.
Objection.
I'll allow just the direction that they were signaling out.
Move to strike to remainder.
Okay.
As far as that vehicle's position within the driveway, is that essentially the position that you observed it in when you and Trooper Proctor and Officer Barrows were walking up the driveway to the home?
Yes, it was.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have a second of those two videos. If you could pause it there, please. Again, Sergeant Mechanic, if you could describe to the jury what you observed of significance within this particular video.
This video captures the vehicle being moved into position to be loaded up onto the flatbed for transport from the scene.
Gentlemen, if you could play for me.
Yeah, you really have to keep your voice up.
Yes, sir. Sergeant Mechanic, from this still image from this video, what, if anything, of significance do you observe in relation to the vehicle at this time that is being loaded onto the tow truck?
The rear taillight is illuminated. You could see a white light coming from that taillight.
If you could, using that laser pointer you have before you, just direct the jury's attention to the specific area you're talking about.
Right there.
Okay. Ms. Gilman, if you could play this through to me.
come in, you can take that down. Now, Sergeant Mechanic, as far as when you left the residence in Dighton, where is it that you went?
Can we turn the lights on, Mr. Lally?
Yes, my apologies.
Once we left the residence in Dighton, we proceeded following the tow truck back to the Canton Police Department.
And was there anywhere else that either you or the tow truck went between Dighton and the Canton Police Department?
No, sir.
And when you say we, it's yourself and Trooper Proctor, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, once you arrived at the Canton Police Department, where did the vehicle go?
The vehicle was unloaded and put into a heated sallyport located at the Canton Police Department.
And in reference to the Canton Police Department and putting it in the sallyport, why was it that it was taken to that location?
It's a location that serves as a storage for a vehicle that would suffice for the size of the vehicle. The location is, as it related to the crime that took place was investigated, was in that town. So we utilized their facility. It was also a heated facility to help melt the snow that had been accumulating on the vehicle.
And at some point, as far as some point subsequent to this, did you learn that there are exterior cameras of the Canton Police Department as well as cameras within the sallyport garage area?
Yes, I did.
And have you reviewed each of those respective cameras prior to your testimony here today?
Yes, I have.
And may I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm showing you a disc, just that to look at that, look up in the finish. You recognize that, sir?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
The Canton Police Department driveway with video.
And what's contained on that is that fair and accurate portrayal of yourself and the tow truck pulling into the Canton Police Department driveway on that afternoon or early evening of January 29th?
Yes, it is.
May I approach, Ron?
Yes.
Come on, seek to introduce the minutes of that. Exhibit.
They have just a moment, Counsel.
Okay.
Mike.
Okay.
And Your Honor, with the court's permission, may we publish that video to jury at this time?
Okay.
Pause there, Ms. Gilman. And just for reference points, in regard to this view of this camera, Sergeant, you're familiar with the Canton Police Station?
Yes, I am.
And so where is this camera view in relation to the Canton Police Department and the sallyport garage where the vehicle eventually goes?
This camera is capturing the driveway entrance to the Canton Police Department. As viewed from Washington Street, that driveway there is on the left side of the structure. The camera itself is pointing towards the entrance of the driveway to the Canton Police Department. As you can see, the brake light illuminated in the shot, that is a Canton Police Cruiser sitting at the edge of the driveway right by Washington Street.
So for orientation purposes, as far as the tow truck and your vehicle, is that coming from the top of the screen to the bottom or the bottom to the top?
It's coming from the top left to the bottom right of the screen towards the rear of the building where the sallyport is located.
Thank you, Ms. Gilman, if you could.
Pause there, Ms. Kelman. Now, as far as what's depicted in this still shot of this video, Sergeant, what if anything do you observe?
That is the tow truck transporting the defendant's vehicle arriving at Canton PD. My vehicle with Trooper Proctor inside, me operating, are following closely behind, as we did the entire way from Dighton all the way to Canton.
Ms. Kelman, if you could play that through the end. Thank you. Now, as far as the interior of the Sally Port garage, as far as the interior of Sally Port of the garage, you mentioned that that is a heated area, is that correct?
That's correct.
And as far as the heat within that, do you know how that is produced or how hot it gets in there as far as the time that you spent within there?
I do not know, but it was a standard garage heating system that blows hot air. As far as temperature, when the doors were open that day, it was freezing cold. It was, I believe, like 18 degrees with, you know, winds blowing. So inside the garage with inside the Sally Port with the doors open, it was quite cold. Once the doors shut, the temperature rose above freezing, and the snow began to melt off of the vehicle.
And from the arrival of that vehicle into the Sally Port garage area, are you aware or have you reviewed video in reference to that?
Yes, I did.
And, Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Showing you another disc, sir. Just ask you to review that one when you finish. And do you recognize that, sir?
Yes, I do.
And does that contain the video that you were just testifying about as far as the arrival of the vehicle at the Canton Police Department Sally Port garage?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
How about the seat to introduce and admit as an exhibit?
No objection, Your
Honor. Now, Sergeant, before we get to that video, if I could just ask, if you know, approximately what time was it that you left Dighton following that tow truck back to the Canton Police Department?
We left Dighton approximately 4:15, 4:20, and we followed the vehicle back to Canton, arriving probably around 5:30 or so p.m.
Thank you, sir. Your Honor, with the court's permission, if we could publish that video for the jury.
Okay.
Pause there for a moment. Sergeant, direct your attention up to the video on the screen just for orientation purposes again. First of all, do you recognize what's depicted in this video?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize it to be?
That is the Sally Port two-bay garage at Canton Police Department with the antique Canton Cruiser on the bottom of the screen and the open spot for a vehicle in the middle of the screen with the four-wheel drive, all-terrain vehicle at the top.
Now, as far as, again, for orientation purposes, the driveway that the jury just witnessed in prior exhibit, Is that to the left of the screen, the right of the screen, or something else? If you know?
The driveway is to the right of the right of the screen.
And this vehicle, the defendant's vehicle, is sort of taken into the garage from the opposite side, or to the left of the screen. Is that correct?
Correct.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could, please.
Your Honor, may we approach briefly?
Okay. Could you pause that, Ms. Gilman? Take a short afternoon break on our long days at about a half an hour, but I think the better use of our time is to give you a 10-minute break now, and then we'll go straight through till 4 o'clock. And if anybody needs a break, please.
All rise for the court, please. Follow me, please.
Jim.
Your Honor, may the witness leave the stand just for a moment.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see you back here in about 10 minutes, Sergeant.
You are unmuted.
Okay, so you want us to watch this now?
If it pleases the court, yes.
Sure. Can we turn out the lights, please, Dave? Thank you.
that the end of it, Mr. Lally, or?
I believe so, yes.
Is that the end of it, Ms. Gilman? Okay. All right. Lights on, please, Dave. Thank you. All right. So I have a copy of the printed docket on 424. Paper number 347 was the Commonwealth's Notice of Discovery XL. I just asked Mr. McDermott to print it for me. Our printer up here doesn't work. All right, so that was before we impaneled. That was the day, I believe, of the long motion in limine trial. All right, so we'll take a 5-minute break, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabe sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash, perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Washablesofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabe Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out washablesofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabe sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabe sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash, perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabe, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabe sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-in feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.